our life, maybe. And hi, you back from school?
The individuality you showed when you were growing up, and this all happened from very young. It wasn't that suddenly, at 40, you began to show individuality or courage. But things you've been through in your personal life, and then lately things with the fair. What is courage? I mean, why do some people have this, and why do some people not? And when is obviously probably don't see yourself as a courageous person. When you look at other women going through difficulties, do you have any? I mean, how? What do you think when you are faced with a very difficult situation? Do you have any sort of philosophy that guides you on? That you can say, well, I always think this way or that, or without getting into cliches, and as you say, without, you know, we all know that tomorrow isn't necessarily going to be better.
Right. Well, I think if I have courage, and I know I've gone through a lot of things in my life, which weren't really easy to get through. They weren't all bad or negative experiences, but just, you know, sometimes setting a hard task for yourself or being faced with a really severe problem financially or whatever. And my one son is retarded and has neurological problems, and that's, you know, that's hard to live with day after day. And so I think if I have any courage, I guess I don't see it so much as courage in the sense of bravery, but as more responsibility to stay fighting, to not quit, to not compromise principles which you already know are correct and in place, and to show that you as an individual can overcome. I am sure that some of that comes from my training from my parents, where, you know, farmers fought the weather. They fought the market, they fought the depression, but they got up every morning and milked the cows. They never quit, they never stopped working hard, they never lost their faith in their land or their ability to farm or to plow a straight row of corn. They never lost their faith in God. They just kept going on when there really wasn't any reason to go on, lots of times. And there's a religious thread in this too, because I do believe in God. I'm doing a lot of studying and thinking and meditating and trying to find out now what I really believe and what's the real nature of man's relationship with God. But I do believe in God, and I do believe in the eventual triumph of good over evil, provided that human beings, that enough human beings are on the side of good. I don't believe that God saves everything and that you can just throw things up in the air and God will take care of it, or that no matter what human beings do, the outcome is eventually going to be rosy because it was prophesied that way. I think that human beings are in a partnership with eternity, and that if the numbers go the wrong way on us, it will go the wrong way, and the difference is in what you and I.
Hi.
Hi, Andrew.
I'm Jean.
This is my friend Jean Lester, and this is my son Andrew Baird.
No, you're not my little bit. Though, come and join us if you like.
You got. I walked up behind you and said, "Boo."
Did you wake up from your nap?
Yeah.
Good. Good. And that's today's
mail.
Good. You can just
lay it. One from Sheerson.
Okay. Is it addressed to you?
No, it isn't addressed to, it's to you.
Okay. Well, you can just lay that in on the table.
Okay, right. I lay it on the table.
All righty. So, it was early training and example. It was this religious base, which, even if I'm not sure at this point about things like prayer and relationships, I am sure of basic principles. I feel really well grounded in basic principles. Having those principles established in my life, I feel real comfortable with standing on those, even if I'm the only person in the country that's standing on them. And I'm willing to go ahead and stand that ground because I've already philosophically decided that it is the place to defend. And I'm, you know, so if there's courage, it comes from those areas. And I don't know much about the kind of courage that, you know, would send you back into a burning building or would be displayed on a battlefield. I don't know about
no,
that
I
kind of courage.
That's not really what I think of. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think of especially from a woman's point of view, but from, you know, there's many people who are, to at times, great difficulty have gone on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You just don't give up. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why you don't give up. I mean, I've never been able to figure that out myself.
Right.
But you don't.
Right.
You
yeah.
know?
Yeah. And I right now, Jean, I'm more troubled by not a fear that I will be a coward, as I am resisting bitterness
yeah,
and resentment.
That's very important.
I don't want to be a negative person.
Yeah, I think that's one reason about why I suggested going to Alice, because I think that that helps work this part out. These are the important, you know, things too. I mean, is so that that doesn't happen to somebody who, the core person, isn't that way.
Right.
I mean, you're not that way.
No,
you know,
I'm not.
I couldn't bear
I'm
to
not.
Become that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see it happening, but I know it can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I just think that. Let me see. I see very much in you the real work ethic. You've worked very hard. Without question, because it's just a way of life, and work is, I guess if you're lucky enough to do work you want, work is a real joy. I always think of work as a joy, it's a real drug somehow that I've been in that situation too. I guess we've covered a lot of things. I'm thinking of things of like, your involvement now with women's issues. You know, I don't want to paint you on as a strong feminist, because although you are, I think it's a misinterpret of things of this sort. Anything else you feel you'd like to say?
Well, I'd like to go back to one of the earlier questions you asked me about, you know, who or what kind of influences, and give credit to two groups of people. One is my aunts, and the other one is my children.
Ah, okay.
I have some of the most vital relatives that ever walked the face of the earth. Primarily, I'm thinking of these aunts are my mother's sisters. Is from my mother's side of the family, and they're all quite different from my mother, who is more of a compliant or non-aggressive kind of person, even though she has a lot of aggressive feelings, which she hasn't been able to work out within herself. But my aunts, nothing stands in their way. Vital, achieving, physically strong, beautiful. They're all in their 70s and 80s, and they look, every one of them, 20 years younger. They, none of these women have worked. Listen to me, that's as chauvinistic a statement as I rail against myself. They all have worked their teeth out their whole life. They haven't worked in business. Mm-hmm. They've all been raised families and been farm wives, and have worked gardens and their houses, and they sewed for their family, and they did farm work, and they helped, and they did their business accounts and all that kind of work. They've also all been very active in the community and church and in community clubs and in extension groups and whatever kinds of activities there were in the community. And when I was younger, I spent every summer going around from one relative's house to the next, and I'd spend a week with Aunt Grace and a week with Aunt Jessie and a week with Aunt Bertha and a week with, or maybe
how
2 weeks with my grandma.
Oh,
I don't know. I was the oldest in my family and one of the oldest grandchildren. And so I was around before most of the families had very many kids. Or when they did have kids, they were all little ones. And I don't know, I just, like I say, my parents were very conformist in a lot of ways, but very, very different in a lot of ways, too. There's no other grandchild in our whole family, and there are tons of us, that did that except me. It was marvelous. And so those strong, intelligent, active, you can't put me down kind of women are in my lineage. Mm-hmm. And the other group that I wanted to mention is my own children. I learned a lot from my kids. And most of this was things that I learned while we were having a lot of trouble, while they were teenagers and going through. They were teenagers at bad times, full of, the generation gap and dropouts and anti-establishment and no rules make any difference. There are no absolutes. There are no values. Try everything. Peer was more important than family. And there were a lot of problems. But going through all of that, I learned an enormous amount from my children, and one of the main things I learned was that it was okay to talk about what was on your mind. And it was in the middle or during all of this time with them that I was having the trouble with my marriage and was divorced. And yet now, I've been divorced 13 years, and there has never been a time when I wasn't in communication with my children, and I think that honestly there never was a time when they didn't feel they could come to me if they had to. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of times we were estranged, but in those times of estrangement they came back to me with the things that they needed, and they turned to me, and now we have wonderful relationships between my children and I. And I learned an awful lot from them. And I learned a lot about courage from them, because some of them made terrible mistakes, but yet they didn't die. They didn't kill themselves. They didn't go over the brink. And they fought their way back to jobs, to respectability, to self-support, to caring for the children they had. And they are contributing respectable, loving, and vital members of the society now. And for a couple of them, that was a comeback. Mm-hmm. And so I learned about courage from them, too.
Interesting, isn't that? Well, I think, boy, that's very, very commendable. I mean, to go through your life and not have a close relationship with your children, I think it's tragic. I can't imagine anything worse.
I can't either.
The self-righteousness that often goes with it, obviously, they didn't do everything they could. I mean, if you're open, it's going to open for you, mm-hmm. kids. I mean, mm-hmm. you're so responsive. And how difficult it is. I hope I don't have to eat my words for 20 years. But the thing is, I think that one of the greatest joys in life is children. Mm-hmm. Not only for the value within themselves and the joy and the dimension of love they show, but for your own personal growth that they give you.
Yes.
A dimension that people forget. Mm-hmm. But it's one of the most important things that happens. Is mm-hmm. that your children give you a chance to grow.
Yeah. And they tie you physically to the future. Each individual person thinks of the future in terms of their own life and they also think of what they can contribute to the world that may live after them, or not in the sense of glory, but in the sense of contribution. Mm-hmm. But that's limited to your own lifespan. And if you're tied up with young people, your own or others, then those things that you do go on for longer. It ties you out into a farther extension. Mm-hmm. One other thing I've done, Jane, that I'm quite proud of, is the service that I had on the school board up here.
Oh, I didn't know you were on the school board.
Right,
that's tremendous.
Yeah. In fact, I was the first woman that ever served on the school board in Fairbanks.
Oh, I'm so glad this came up. Yeah, this is
right,
really
yeah. And I told you earlier how from the time I was a kid I was told that I always wanted to go to college, and that was a yearning for me, and mm-hmm. still is. And I'm very supportive of the public education system, or any kind of education, self-taught, mm-hmm. anything. I believe very, very firmly in public support of education, and in a really high-class, strong educational system mm-hmm. that is geared mm-hmm. to make people change, not one that's geared to retain the status quo, but one that's geared to change. And I'm very interested, even yet, in education. And my dad had served on the school boards in those little bitty country schools, you know, when I was growing up, and I saw that example. And my first service on the school board was by appointment.
Mother?
A member of the... Just
you have a phone call.
Well, just a second, honey.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I told Miss Wade, I said, just a minute, and I said I would go out and get you.
All right. Do you know who...
And it was your vitality of your aunts and their example they set to that, mm-hmm. you know, made you just feel that you could accomplish anything?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was true. They were farm women doing housework, being housewives and mothers in very conventional roles, in a very conservative, conventional setting. But they were still individuals, and whatever they wanted to do as individuals, they did.
Okay, that's what I wanted to say. Then you went on to say you thought of serving on a school board. When you were in One Thing Man's Room, you ever thought of going back to just get your master's in education, just for the fun?
Yeah, yeah. I've thought about, you know, going back to school, and it would be an enjoyable occupation for me because I enjoy going to school and I enjoy the learning. It would also be, if I could afford the cost mm-hmm. of going to school, it would be a way of providing another set of credentials for me mm-hmm. that would be unarguable.
That's right. And it might be just fun to do it.
Right.
Why don't you think of something to give yourself a break? Anyway, tell me more about the school board.
Okay. Well, I was proud of the being able to serve on the school board, and I particularly loved being the first woman on the board. Mm-hmm. And I think I was saying when I went in that I was appointed to fill out a portion of a term for a man who had been on the board and left for one reason or another. And that was, in early summer, I think it was. And then in October that year, when the regular school board elections came along, I would have to stand for election again. But the setting at that time was interesting, and it has contributed a really unique thing in my life, and it is partly the basis for a certain amount of reputation, which I enjoy in political circles here. This was at the time that the boroughs were first being organized, and the legislation to establish boroughs was being argued session after session in the legislature. You see, and this is right after statehood. Statehood was in 58 and 59, and we're talking early 60s now. And so the business of local governments in this great, huge new state was a big source of argument. And there were a lot of people that were pro and con, and it was a big argument, you know. And so that was what the setting was. And the very first meeting, I was active before I got on the school board. I was active in the groups which were voluntarily trying to establish a borough in this area. because the legislation that was in existence allowed communities to petition for voluntarily forming a borough. And I was active in a group that was trying to do that and was studying the whole borough concept. So I knew that background. Well, I was appointed to the school board. The very first meeting that I went at, the school board was involved in some kind of a decision which had to do with a construction contract. I think about building a new school or something. I don't just remember for sure, but something like that. Well, the nature of the contract or the timing of the contract that they were considering would have been negated, would have just had to be thrown out later on, pending certain actions related to this formation of the borough that were going to come about. There was an election scheduled later on, and depending on the outcome of that election, it would have had an effect on this contract that the board was considering. And so here I am, first woman ever on the school board, first meeting I was ever at, this issue about this contract coming up. And because I knew the borough background on it, I ended up being the one person on the board who voted against issuing the contract. Well, of course, it turned out I was right. And people later on found out about that, and there were editorials and that sort of thing, you know. Here's this woman, first time on the board, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da, calling the right signal. So that was kind of fun. But anyway, then the whole process of the borough thing went on, and in a short period of time, within maybe like a few months, it probably wasn't that fall's election, it might have been the next fall's election. There were three elections, just bang, 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 bang. There was the regular election, there was the voluntary borough election, and there was the mandatory borough election. See, if people didn't do it voluntarily, then there had been a law passed in the legislature that said mandatory boroughs would be set up. So Fairbanks was slated first to voluntarily form a borough, which was turned down at the polls. Then we had our regular standard every year municipal elections. And then a few months after that, there was the mandatory borough election. So within a short period of time, everybody that wanted to serve on the school board was on the ballot three times. I was on the ballot three times in that, each one of those times, in that, and each time I was the highest vote getter in each issue.
Oh, how wonderful. How wonderful.
So that was fun. And I served on the school board altogether about five years. And during that time, this whole terrible political, terrible, I don't mean terrible in the sense of the outcome, but controversial issue of the borough and how the school board would relate to the borough and whether the borough would be formed and how we would get our school budgets financed under the borough system of government. And all of that came about during my period. And also the flood, the 1967 flood, came at the time I was on the school board. And there were other issues. We also passed the first bond issue for the construction of new schools that had been successfully lobbied for and passed for many years. And we built four or five new schools all in one whack a couple of years after I was on the board. And then shortly after I was on the board, there were other women that came on too. But it was a time of great striving and a lot of problems, political and financial and physical, with budgets and new buildings and floods and repairs and so forth. And so it was a really busy time. And I always was very happy. Being on the school board was fun, and I was proud of it, and I felt that I had done something for my own children and for the community and for the future. It was a very rewarding time. So I liked being on the school board.
Anything else? I was noticing, I've only watched the time, it's just, oh my goodness, be quick. Anything you want to say about
it? Well, I suppose one other thing about me that's important to recognize is my tie to the land, to soil, and to farming.
Oh yes, I think that is too important. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've told you enough about my childhood and my background so that you know it from there. here in Alaska, my husband and I started a chicken farm, and we were in the egg production business for about 10 years, and actually did quite good at it, and we were very active on lots of economic development committees and agricultural development committees, and a lot of federal programs that were tied toward developing rural areas at that particular time, and we formed a committee here which was called Rural Area Development, and it was one of the first such committees formed in the United States. It was under a federal program. I mean, we didn't initiate the idea. There was a federal program, but we picked it up and started our committee here, and we were one of the first ones in the nation and the first one in Alaska, and our organizational structure was used as a pattern later on for other things. Unfortunately, all of this kind of economic development and agricultural development and rural development stuff that we all worked our heart out for years on just all came to naught. There, you can't see anything different in Fairbanks now for all the work and dreams and efforts and everything that we did. We might as well not done it, other than that it affected individual people probably at the time. But we had great dreams, and I still think those dreams were well-founded then, and that they are well-founded now, that the Tanana Valley has tremendous agricultural potential, and sometime, it will be developed, and we will see very lush grain production and hay production and livestock industries throughout the Tanana Valley. And I'm, as a person, I don't function well unless I have my feet and my hands in the soil. And as a citizen of Alaska, I think it's absolutely reprehensible that we have not developed agriculture, at least to the self-sufficiency standpoint, just for our own population. And also, you know, as a citizen and a taxpayer and somebody who looks forward to the growth of Alaska and the development of a good economy and a good lifestyle here, I think agriculture is very important to that, and we have got to get on the ball and support people who want to develop agriculture and provide a system and a structure, or at least an absence of obstacles, so that they can go ahead with them. So that.
Good. I think I've got some very